Out there, oh, a peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. And welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. My interviews are done in the studio of Planet FM or via Zoom. Today I've invited Patricia Williams to a Zoom recording for a broadcast. Patricia, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Thank you. Thank you, Beate.
Patricia Williams is born in Aotearoa, New Zealand, but grew up in colonial Fiji, with her father being born of Australian parents in Fiji. She's trained as a teacher and is member of the Anashim community, the same community of lay women as Letitia Puttenpada belongs to. Patricia is winner of the Ashton Wiley Charitable Trust Best Manuscript Award, and she has just published the book Between the Harbour and the Mountain. As I understand, Ashton Wiley was particularly interested in spirituality, personal development, and positive relationships. So congratulations, Patricia. This award is certainly a recognition of a very special book, and you're now in the company of Joy Cowley and other famous New Zealand authors.
I don't think so, but thank you anyway.
But Patricia, you grew up in Fiji and moved to Aotearoa, New Zealand as a young adult. Mm-hmm. The title of your book sounds almost like a pepeha, a Maori introduction into your person. Is this a very personal book?
Yes, it is, because it was originally a journal entries. So journal entries or diary, what you write in a diary is very personal. Yes, it is. It was. That's why I was a bit reluctant to publish it at first.
But now you're happy with it? You're okay with it?
Yeah, it's okay, yes.
Well, I understand that you've been a teacher for most of your life. Did you ever think of becoming an author?
No, not at this stage. I didn't. It just somehow grew. And when I was keeping my journal, over a period of time, I had no intention of teaching anybody anything. It was a personal thing, really. The reflections I saw, things that happened, just caught my eye or my imagination, and I recorded them. And that's how it began.
So who gave you the idea of publishing them, or who promoted the publishing idea to you?
The person who helped me put in the application for the manuscript award, Linda, she is the owner of Calico Publishing. And she and one of the editors that checked the manuscript said one day, oh, this would make a lovely little book, when they were checking the manuscript. And that's how it grew from there.
Yes. So you shared your manuscript with people who knew what to do.
Yeah, that's right. They knew what to do. They actually knew how to organize all these separate entries scattered over a period of time, no connecting themes or anything, into a connected, organized little manuscript.
Oh, that's wonderful. It seems like it's a little team effort.
It was, yes.
And in which way do you think that the teaching, that your teaching career influenced your life and your writings?
The teaching, I don't think, influenced my life at all. In fact, I didn't really want to be a teacher.
Oh, what happened?
Well, I was asked to be and I became one.
Yeah.
So, it wasn't the teaching, I don't think, that had the profound influence on me and led to this book.
What was your original dream of becoming?
The book came from something that I could read a little section of it to explain it better to you.
Yes, please.
Can I do that?
Yes, please.
You see, there's a Japanese word called yugen, and it means, it's hard to explain it in English. It's when, it's an experiential thing. It's when you experience awe or transcendence, intuition. It's something that touches deeply at the deepest part of your being. And that's what influenced me. And I'm going to read you a little bit, which will explain that to you.
Yes.
I can't read it all. It'll be too long. I'll just read a little extract from it. My entire life has been influenced by the profound yugen moments of my youth. As a teenager growing up in Fiji, where the evenings are cool and the night skies unpolluted, I would often lie outside on a woven Fijian mat on our front lawn and gaze out up into the darkness. The stars and the unimaginable distances, the vast cosmic panorama, and my tiny infinitesimal self would communicate in silence. And my young spirit would question all those existential mysteries. Where does it all come from? When did it begin? What is beyond the infinite distances? How do I fit into all of this? And above all, who made it? My Catholic upbringing had a ready answer. God, of course. If this were true, it made sense to try and discover more of that mystery called God. And this is what I did. I joined the convent where one's whole life is devoted to discovering, experiencing, and serving this mystery of all mysteries, which we name as God. Now, many decades later, I'm still no nearer to grasping the answer. I'll leave it at that.
That's beautiful.
Now, that's how it started. That was the bedrock of my life.
The bedrock in a hangmat.
Beg your pardon?
The bedrock in a hangmat.
Yes. Actually, lying on the lawn.
Oh, no, yeah, okay.
Lying flat on the lawn, looking up into the dark tropical skies and just wondering. And I was a teenager and I began to question things. And that's still going on in my life.
Did you find
any? I haven't found the answer yet.
Maybe there is not one answer.
No.
But did you bring this story to the convent when you joined the convent as a young girl? Did you ask the people in the convent, other sisters, about these questions?
No, I don't think so. We just we got immersed then in scripture and theology and all that kind of thing. Yes.
Hmm.
But anyway, that was my life's journey, my life's search, if you like.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's why the book is also described as a collection of personal reflections on everyday life.
Yes.
And now you were talking about being a teenager on the lawn in Fiji. How far back are these reflections, these personal reflections?
The one in the book, a couple of them go back to about 40 years ago, but the majority are much closer to this present time. It's when I finished work, when I stopped working, I had the time and the relaxation to, and things began to gel, if you like, in that I was able to write things down that struck me as wonderful or interesting, moments that I wanted to capture, somewhat in the way, as I think I said to you, an artist sees something beautiful or something that strikes them. It might be very ugly, but they want to record it, so yeah, they paint a picture. I saw many things struck me, and I recorded them in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this book became. It was born out of those journal reflections. Some are very, very ordinary, nothing special at all, very ordinary little everyday happenings. So the subtitle of the book, Beata, is not just Between the Harbour and the Mountain, but the subtitle is Reflections on the Ordinary and the Profound, both. Because in the ordinary, there is something profound very often, if we stop to look.
And I think it's wonderful that you've written it down, because it will keep you reminding of situations, and also it will be some nourishment for others who are maybe asking the same questions or similar questions. Exactly. And then they will see, well, I'm not alone. I'm not the only person who's questioning these things in my life.
Yes, that's right. That's true.
So it's really nice. Do you mind reading another little part of your reflections?
Yeah. How about I read you something ordinary?
Yes, please.
Okay. Ordinary. All right.
Well, what is ordinary?
There are quite a few ordinary ones, very just ordinary little everyday happenings. This one is very short, so it'd be appropriate to read this. It records something that happened when we lived in Ornihanga. This morning I see an awful sight, and it troubles me all day. As I walk out the back door, a thrush hops towards me across the lawn, and even though just a meter away, it seems totally unaware of my presence. The normally timid and easily disturbed creature advances with a strange hypnotic obsession. Is it blind, deaf, crazy? My questions are soon resolved. It heads for our small vegetable garden. And I know now what the deadly attraction is. I try to shoo it away, but it is as if I don't exist. When it picks at a dying snail, I realize that a potent pesticide in the snail and slug bait has affected its brain. The vegetable patch is littered with dead and dying slugs and snails. And obviously, over a period of time, our thrush has been attracted to the lethal food source. I cannot bear to watch the little creature and walk away. We have no more thrushes in our garden now. The sweet obards that precede the noisy flow of early morning traffic past our house have lost their most rapturous performers. You look sad.
It's a sad story, yes. So it's always difficult if you interfere in the chain of nature.
Yes.
You want to kill the snails to protect your vegetables, and then you are accidentally killing also the birds that you like.
Yes, it's a problem. We haven't resolved it. I talk about that. Our needs and their needs. We haven't resolved that paradox.
But Pope Francis also says in the Laudato Si, we're all interconnected. So we can't just think that we protect ourselves from this, but you don't know what the consequences are if you don't look deep enough.
That's right. That's why I have a great admiration for Buddhists. They have huge respect for life. Little story in there about that too, which you'll enjoy if you buy my book.
Okay. So is there, you said earlier that your reflections were not connected. You just wrote down what you saw, and that the editor or whoever prepared the book, that team, they were going through the reflections and put them in a kind of order. Is there a certain theme coming through?
Yes. What my publisher suggested was to write all the titles down. I gave a title to each little entry as I did it, and a date.
Yes.
He said, no, we don't need any dates. So all the dates are gone. But the title was there. So I topped up 50 or 60 little pieces of paper, a couple of centimetres long, with the names on them, spread them all on the dining room table. And then she said, put them into themes, any theme, spontaneously. Don't think about it too much. And that's what I did. I went through them all and sorted them into little themes. And that's how the book was written.
Can you tell us some examples of themes?
Yes, I can. The contents. Awakening, and there are four entries under that. Blendings, and there are five under that. Mystery, there are four under that. The breath of things, there are four there. Unity, there are five. Fractured spaces. And then, do you want any more? Beneath the surface. The biggest one, the longest one, is called under the theme of Earth Home. These are nature, things about nature, our natural world around us.
So are you a person who loves going out in the nature and watching the birds and the worms and
I am.
Other and animals and flowers and
yes, very much so. Yes, I am.
So it in a way it's a little bit of eco spirituality. So you have the nature and are you also thinking about how to preserve, because you mentioned now the consequence, for example, with the bird. But are you also thinking of something positive regarding nature, something that humans helped, you know?
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
But we've done more harm than help, I think, with the species being deleted. Yes.
Yeah, so.
And I also think in regard to what you're saying there, Beate, that we humans as a species, we evolved millions of years ago in a very close relationship with the natural world. That's what we evolved in and through, and it was all around us. And as we developed, we were still there. But then nowadays, now we are cut off in many instances with our urban settings. We live in the city. We're cut off from our home. Our original evolutionary home, we're separate from it in many, many cases. And unless we can get back to that, we're going to have a sense of loss and grief and anxiety.
I do still believe that because there are so many people on Earth now that it's difficult to go back into the nature, but we can bring something of nature into the urban cities.
Yes.
And to like with parks or with your own little garden that we, because we are too many people on Earth today in order to live as we lived 2000 years ago. But I think that if we bring something of that here and remember having a little garden, attracting the bees, even if you have a tiny little garden, even if you have a balcony or put some pots around your house. But I think that it's important to stay and watch the moments.
You are right. That's exactly right. That's right. But a lot of us don't think about that, really. We're so busy.
Well, I talked to a lady the other day who is working as a kindergarten teacher in Germany. But this kindergarten is a forest kindergarten.
Lovely.
So they spent the whole day in the forest with the
lovely. Plant.
So they are looking at nature from the beginning, and all their games have to do with nature. That's and at any time, any kind of weather, they are out in the forest.
Yes.
And it does create an appreciation for nature within the children.
That's a wonderful start in life. They're very fortunate children.
Yes, well, maybe in New Zealand, I don't know the situation, but it could be that there are at least that kids are taken to the bush and look at what is available in the bush. It's so beautiful in New Zealand.
Go on.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to know if so. The stories that you are reading now, it's like you have little digestible portions, so you can read every now and then when you feel like it. Yes. So you take the book and say, I feel like reading something about nature, and then you pick one of these little stories. Mm-hmm. So it's like almost like a recipe book, depending on how you feel. Is that, could you see it like this?
No, not really. it's, yes, I don't know. It just depends how each person lives and wants to live. I don't know. I don't think it's the kind of thing you would read from cover to cover, though.
Yeah. So it's digestible portions. And and you don't need the context. You can just read one story, whatever story you feel like.
Yes. My publisher had a problem with me. She was used to things having beginning, middles, and end. You know how when you're learning to write essays, you always have an introduction, you have the middle, and you have a conclusion? Journals are not like that. So I had to twist myself a little bit and give conclusion when often I would just leave it up in the air, which is what journal writers do. But I love journals. I've read them all my life. And they're my favorite type of reading genre, yes. Yeah.
When you talk about journals, I've been in a session about journal preparing journals, and the lady used a lot of pictures. So she added to the words, she added pictures that came to her mind. Do you use any pictures?
I did have some in my originals. Yes, I had some photos, for example, that I had taken. And my publisher said, no, this kind of book, you don't need photographs. You don't need pictures. So there's a little, very important little picture, a very symbolic little picture. It opens the book and ends the book. It's the grey warbler, which, as I write through, is a symbol and a metaphor of hope.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Because when I was writing, where I'm sitting here talking to you now, there's a tree outside, a macadamia tree, and that's where the little grey warbler sings from, and around our garden. And to me, it has become a symbol of hope in a quite desperate world. And so I asked the editor, the publisher, would she make sure I could have that little grey warbler in the beginning and end of the book, and it is.
So it's another very personal picture.
Yes.
The personal picture to personal reflections.
That's right, yes, yes.
That's beautiful. So how would you describe your book with your own words?
It's a collection of personal reflections. Simple as that. Organized into some sort of thematic headings, which was a bit difficult to do because, as you know, a journal is a spontaneous, unplanned, unpremeditated, quick, on the moment, in the moment, recording of something. But somehow or other, it became a book. Thanks to the skill of Linda, my publisher.
So it's, in a way, it's a kind of snapshot of words connected to a thought, to a feeling.
Yes, well put, Beata. You should have been the publisher. Well put. That's what it is, actually. Yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I hope that you'll have many people who will feel, in a way, comforted, but also taken away somewhere in their thoughts. You know, I think that is something that literature can do so well.
Yes,
especially if you don't have photos. So if you have a picture. So I was thinking, for example, you put a picture of a bird, or when you describe the bird. But if you have just the words, then your imagination will be drawn to maybe a completely different bird. And when you say the bird looked sad, how does a bird look sad? I think that's a very personal feeling, where you think, oh, well, to me, it looked sad. Somebody else might not even see that the bird looks sad.
No.
But if somebody reads it, next time they see a bird, they think, does the bird look sad?
I didn't say the bird looks sad. I said, you look sad, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but you said that the bird looked blind, as if it was blind or something like that.
Oh, I see. No, actually, the funny thing is, I had a man here cutting some trees for me earlier this year, and the grey warbler, the rira rira, was singing away, and I said, oh, listen to them. Rira rira, the grey warbler's singing. Isn't it beautiful? He said, no, it's a very sad sound for me. I said, oh, really? I said, I've just written a book, and the grey warbler is a symbol of hope and joy. He said, when he was a boy growing up in South Canterbury, he and his brother, there were just two of them on the farm, and his older brother was sent away to boarding school, and he was so sad, so isolated, so lonely, and the grey warbler used to sing, and it always reminded him, whenever he hears it now, of the sadness he felt when his brother went away to boarding school in Christchurch. So for that man, the man cutting out trees, it was a very negative sound. For me, it's a beautiful, hopeful sound.
See, we are all different and we are all connected.
Yes, we are.
Thank you so much for all your insights in your book. That is wonderful. And I hope that many people will read the book and be filled with hope. Because I think that's what you'd like to express, isn't it, hope?
Yes, I had to write an epilogue because when I first did it, the COVID pandemic hadn't started. So I wrote about climate change, which is drastic, but then I had to write an addition because of the pandemic. And so it was quite difficult to find that little hopeful bird.
Mm.
I did write it.
Hmm. Well, we still have to keep on with our hope because only if you give up, that's when hope ends.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you very much, Patricia.
Thank you, Beate. Thank you very much.
And I just want to, for the listeners, I just want to draw the attention to a couple of events that are going to be held with Titi Ponamu, Study and Joy. And Patricia, you see, I also chose a bird's name for my organization,
Titi Ponamu. Yes.
On the 25th of November from 2 to 3:30, Letitia Kutumbadat is going to facilitate the second part of our session on Ignatian Imaginative Contemplation. So if you'd like to know more about it or refresh your knowledge about this special kind of meaningful prayer, please register with us and join via Zoom. And as we are preparing ourselves for Christmas, we will also have two further programs. Monday, 22nd of November, Brother Kieran Fenn will give a presentation on the infancy narratives. And on Monday, the 6th of December, I will give a presentation on nativity scenes. All sessions will be held on Zoom, so we don't depend on any respective alert levels. Thank you very much, Patricia, and I wish you all the best for the book and for the readers. Kia kaha, keep safe, and for more information, studyjoy.nz. Thank you.
Out there, oh, peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. I'm not
a portal to Auckland's community.